and welcome to Breaking Humanity, a podcast about anything about true crime and paranormal. That's basically it. I'm Bailey, and this is Yanni.
Hello.
First episode of the podcast, thankfully, again. We tried this before COVID hit and all that, and no. We went on a hiatus, and everything died. It was good. We were great.
It was stressful. It was very, very stressful, okay?
You went through stuff. I did. I'm fine.
Oh my god. It's nice to be back, though.
Yeah. And recording in person.
This is our first time recording in person. Exciting.
Yes. We've never done this before.
Yes, and I feel like it's harder.
Nah, it's not. Okay. So, first thing on the schedule. Yes. What's going on in our lives today?
What do I want to share?
How much of their personal life do they want me
to know? Do I want them to know?
I'm going on a trip soon. Won't say when and won't say where, but I'm going on a trip.
Me too!
Yeah!
When's your trip?
Well, I said I wouldn't say when!
Sometime this year.
Okay, second thing on the schedule. What we're doing today. So,
today's topic is true crime, isn't it?
Yes, it is.
Why'd you do the winky face?
Okay. I don't know, I like my winky faces. You got a problem with that?
That was like one of them animes, you know? Like, hey!
Hey, I can't snap! That's
sad. Anyway,
alright. I can whistle, but that's way too loud.
Okay. Okay, we were saying, right?
Anyways, true crime. So originally, the original idea for the podcast was for both of us to do it, but we realized it's way too long.
That one time took like 4 hours.
We recorded for 4 hours, and it took me 2 days to edit and condense the podcast down to 1 hour and 30 minutes. I will murder you for that. All of that was her fault, by the way.
I got off topic, okay.
You got off topic about so much. So much!
I'm trying to make it interesting.
I can tell.
Okay. Sadness. But yes, today is true crime.
True crime, hosted by me. Next time, Yanni.
Yes.
I forgot what you're going to be doing, but don't share to the audience already. It's somewhere in Russia, guys.
Yes. Maybe. I think.
For me, I think maybe. Is it?
Hold on.
She doesn't even know what her theme's about.
I know it's somewhere over there, somewhere.
Okay, we're good. It's going good.
We'll figure it out next time.
Yeah, when it actually matters. Now. Hinterkaifeck.
Yes.
Heard anything about it?
No. I feel like you've told me about it, but I'm like,
I have.
Dumb.
I have before. So, Hinterkaifeck.
Yes.
You want to know where this story takes place?
Where? Germany! What?
I mean, that's true!
Is it?
Yeah, it's in Germany. But, Hinterkaifeck, it's behind Kaifeck. This murder took place behind the town called Kaifeck. And so, they called it Hinterkaifeck, which means behind Kaifeck.
Okay.
Such a weird name, but it's fine. So, basically, Hinterkaifeck murders. Murders and decapitation, I should say that.
Isn't decapitation, like, within
it the happened murder? After the murder.
Oh my god.
It took place on the evening of March 31st in 1922.
I know someone whose birthday is March 31st?
Yeah. Seriously?
Yes.
Well, scary. That's the only thing you're gonna remember now.
Yeah. On your birthday, this happened, man.
Six family members were killed in a small farmstead located 70 kilometers, or 43 miles, north of Munich, Germany.
Munich, Germany.
Also, that would be very fun to travel to. After the murder, the perpetrator lived with all six corpses for 3 days after the murder.
Do you think, are there any, like, signs of necrophilia?
What do you like to know?
Weather boy. I bet it's coming up.
Mm-hmm. So, there's over 100 suspects which have been interviewed for the case, but the perpetrator or perpetrators have never been identified. And this happened in 1922.
So is this like a lost case, like an unsolved?
Yeah. You'll figure out why it's truly unsolved because of some stupid incident that may or may not have actually happened during World War II. My best guess it did happen, but okay.
A lot of things happen that we think don't happen, but they do happen.
But they do happen. Before we get into the murder, though. Okay, so let me describe the victims. So we have Andreas, 63. The family father lived on the farm with his wife, Kazelia, who's 72.
Oh, that's a pretty name.
I know, it's such a pretty name.
Yes.
So, their grown, widowed daughter, Victoria, who's 35, and their two grandchildren, Kazelia Jr., 7, and Joseph, 2, who lived in the house. The maid, Maria...
of course.
Bogmengartner. My best guess of the name, I don't speak German.
Of course, there's gotta be, like, hard-to-pronounce names.
Go. Bogmengartner, 44, was also found in the house at the same time. So... sadly, but also funny, Maria had just started her job that day and was killed that day.
Are you kidding?
No.
Imagine, like, getting a job and then, like, something bad happening that same day. That sucks, man.
I know, right? It's like, oh, I got my new job. Crap, I spilled coffee on my boss.
That's sick. It's like one of those cliche dramas, you know what I mean?
You talk about K-dramas?
Don't out me, okay? Okay, yes, I do like K-dramas. Okay.
I know you like K-dramas. You were texting me about them while you were watching them.
Okay, side note. I recommend Vincenzo. It's so good, bro. I swear. Okay, back on topic, otherwise I'm gonna keep rambling.
Okay, so 6 months before the attack, the family maid quit. So, like, before Maria came, the family maid had quit. It was widely believed that she had quit after hearing strange sounds in the attic, claiming that the house was haunted, which she claimed the house was haunted because of the strange sounds.
I wouldn't like to work there either if that was happening.
Neither would I.
It'd be weird.
In the police reports, this proved to be unsubstantiated, so she didn't say it in the police reports, but local rumor says. Mm-hmm. Andreas Gruber, the father of the house, found a strange newspaper from Munich on the property sometime in March of 1922. That said 2020.
Everything happened in 2020.
Everything happened in 2020. Though no one in the family or vicinity had subscribed to the newspaper. Mm-hmm. So he just got a strange newspaper the one day.
Which is sus because... Okay, I'm not gonna say my theory. You go ahead.
Okay.
I have theory already, though.
Finally, a week before the murders, Gruber told neighbors he discovered tracks in the fresh snow.
Bro.
These tracks led from the woods to his house, but none led back to the woods.
Which means that there's still someone there.
When Andreas told his neighbors about it, they offered to lend Andreas a gun to defend his family. Mm-hmm. For whatever reason, Andreas declined.
For
whatever reason. Sorry. That was my lisp coming out. I actually wrote reason. I will prove to you. Reason.
Whatever reason.
Yeah. Andreas had also failed to report this to the police. So he didn't go back to the police and report the prints.
I'm gonna be honest. I probably would have moved out.
Probably, yeah. So, later that night, the family had heard footsteps in the attic. Gruber also didn't report this to the police, but told his neighbors about it. Mm-hmm. Keys had also gone inexplicably missing. So.
Okay, so we have,
a lot of shit.
The maid reported,
like, footsteps in the attic.
Footsteps in the attic.
6 months before the murders.
Uh-huh. Mm-hmm. And then, like, the tracks, and then the keys going missing. Yeah. And then, like, more footsteps and noises.
Yeah.
And they don't think that's suspicious, really.
And newspaper.
And the newspaper. Like, if I don't read... Oh, my God. If I don't read... I'm the only one who reads books in my home.
Yeah.
So, if I see a book that I know that's not mine, I would be suspicious. I'd be like, I know my stuff. So, it's kind of strange.
Some theories suggest that it was a rather safe area near the farm, so it's possible that Andreas convinced himself that the footsteps in the woods were nothing to worry about. So it was safe, and he was like, safe neighborhood, nothing could be wrong.
That sounds like someplace.
It sounds like The Purge.
Yes.
Doesn't it though? Was it what purge was it? Was it like the second purge? Where like they're in a safe neighborhood where the neighbors actually wanted to kill them.
That's sad. That reminds me of Us.
Oh, Us was a good
movie. It is a good
Us was movie. Good.
Yeah.
Now a really good movie to watch is The Velishka. Oh my god. Please read before you watch that movie and you'll
understand.
You find it hilarious.
Yes, you'll understand our disappointment.
Okay, so on the afternoon of March 31st, 1922, the nude maid, Maria.
Yes.
Cut it off. B. arrived at the farm. Maria's sister had escorted her there and was possibly the last person to see her alive.
I'd be really sad. Like, if I was her sister, I'd be, like, devastated.
Yeah.
Because what if they were arguing?
They probably weren't. They were probably like, oh, you got a new job.
Oh.
You should be happy. I'll see you later, sis. I'll see you later, sis.
See you later.
I'll be back.
I'll be back. Wow. That's sad.
So around the evening, Victoria, Gabrielle, I'm just going to say their first names. Around the evening, Victoria, yes. Kazilia Jr., Andreas, and Kazilia were lured to the barn through the stable. Each family member had been murdered one at a time.
All the family, right?
Mm-hmm. Besides from the maid and the 2-year-old.
Oh, that's why you said their names. I was like, why'd you say all their names? Okay. To the barn, you said,
right? Yeah, to the barn. Okay. Through the stable.
Mm, horses.
The perpetrators used a matok, which is a pickaxe with a blade on one side and then, like, a pick on the other.
Yes.
So you kind of, like, axe blade and then pick.
Yes.
That thing.
Like,
the blade had belonged to the family.
Yes.
He killed the family with blows to the head. The perpetrator moved into the living quarters where they killed Joseph, who was sleeping in his crib, and Maria in the bedchambers.
So the stable people first. The people went to the stable first.
And those bludgeoning? That, yeah. And well, not bludgeoning. It'd be more piercing. This sounds like D&D damage.
Piercing damage.
You take 5 points of piercing damage.
Roll a d20.
Roll a d20. Add 5. So, Cecilia Jr. was found with clumps of her own hair in her hands, suggesting she was the only one that took, a long time to die.
Mm-hmm.
And she was the youngest. Investigators say that Cecilia Jr. might have spent hours lying next to her dead family, writhing in pain. Researchers say it was likely she had died from shock and not from the wound.
She was just 7, too, right? The girl? Aww.
She was 7 years old, watched her family die, and then died of shock. See, if anyone actually came up to the farm, she probably would have been saved, but at what cost?
True.
Nah. Almost a week later, on April 4th, Cazelia Jr. Had missed 2 days of school. And when Sunday came around, the Grubbers missed church. They figured something was up. Neighbors reported seeing the white chimney smoke wafting from the farmhouse after the murders, causing them to believe that nothing was wrong. Farm chores, such as feeding the animals and milking the cow, had also been taken care of. It wasn't until the mailman had noticed the mail had been piling up that he called the police.
Oh.
So.
He was just living their life.
Yeah.
Like, okay, thinking in, the mind or, the point of view of the serial killer or the perpetrator. Wait, do you think it's because he wanted the illusion of a family?
Maybe.
And he wanted to know what it was like to feel like he had people with him or something. I don't know. Because he did live, 3 days with the family, right?
Family, yeah.
The corpses.
That or he's just a true sociopath and just wanted to stay there.
Yes.
And look at the bodies some more. He didn't do anything to the bodies.
So it wasn't, a sexual desire. It was just, what's that word? Like, he just wanted to do it.
Yeah. The police had was unsuccessful in finding the murderer. Mm-hmm. Through the years, Munich police interviewed more than 100 suspects, as I previously said, and as recently as 1968. And so they're still looking for them. Didn't find their body, didn't find the perpetrator. They found the bodies. murders still remain unsolved to the day. One hair-raising detail not mentioned about the Gruber family is that the Andres and his daughter Victoria had been arrested for incest in 1915. So.
Maybe it's like someone, like the perpetrator was someone who was getting back at them?
You're almost on it.
Is that like a theory?
Yeah. Hmm? It was said that, said to have been an abusive relationship with Victoria serving 1 month in prison and Andres 1 year. This fact influenced three theories. One theory is that Andres and Victoria's incestuous relationship is that Victoria's husband had come back after many years and been horrified that Victoria had a child with another man, which would be Joseph.
Her father? She had a son with her father. The two-year-old would be her son.
Yeah. And then the father of...
Victoria?
No, it wasn't Victoria.
Oh, the little girl. Cecilia Jr.
Yeah.
Would be...
The first husband.
Confusion.
Yeah. Many thought that Joseph was the product of the continued incest, so some thought Victoria's husband went ballistic and killed the whole family. Though the theory is broken down when it was revealed that many of her husband's military comrades attested to him being KIA, or killed in action, mm-hmm. in World War I. They even insisted they had seen his dead body with their own eyes.
Mm-hmm.
So
that would rule him out as a suspect.
Another theory suggests that Joseph had been a son of a nearby neighbor instead. The neighbor's son had recently died, so it would postulated that he might have been upset that his child with Victoria was the only one that survived. The theory doesn't hold up a lot of water because it is largely speculative, not to mention the same neighbor was the man that offered Andreas a gun to protect his family. So it wouldn't make sense.
Unless he was really psychopathic and he likes games.
Maybe, but...
But that's rare.
That's very rare. It isn't like... This isn't the movies.
True.
The last theory suggests that they might have committed a murder-suicide. This can only be quickly dismissed because none of their fatal injuries could have been self-inflicted. Some of the more recent theories today include from, like, students in the German Police Academy, which they used modern techniques, unlike people did in 1928. But all the suspects have been eliminated except for one, but refused. But they refused to release information to protect the family. Great. The police have also put together the fact that the murderers, or murderers, may have been living in the house for 6 months up to the murder. The theory has been concluded by the fact that they heard voices in the attic according to the previous maid.
Hmm.
After the murders, the bodies were sent for autopsies.
Mm-hmm.
They removed the heads of the bodies.
For clairvoyance.
Yeah. And because of that... God. They lost the heads in World War II.
Are you kidding
me? No, I'm not!
Oh my God.
They lost the heads in World War II.
They could have gotten, like the evidence from it, too, right?
Yeah. They lost the heads. And they still haven't found the heads.
Where would the heads be?
Don't even know.
I wonder, like, where would they even lose it in?
I don't know. How do you lose 6 human heads? I don't even know. Anyways, Inspector George Reingruber and his colleagues from the Munich Police Department investigated the killings. Initially, investigators were hampered by the number of people who had been interacted with the crime scene, moved bodies and items around, and even cooked and ate meals in the kitchen. So, basically...
They lived there.
And then people went in. The townsfolk went in.
Mm-hmm.
And touched everything.
They ruined the... No.
I know, right?
People are like Snoopy, though. Like...
It's Snoopy. Like the Velishka Exmer house.
Yes.
So, the police first suspected the motive to be robbery, and then interrogated traveling craftsmen, vagrants, and several inhabitants from surrounding villages.
But if it was a robbery, it doesn't make sense if it was a robbery, right? Because, like, why kill the people?
There was a large chunk of money sitting on the counter. It hadn't been touched.
That, too. If it was a robbery, they would have taken that stuff.
Exactly.
Yeah.
It doesn't make sense.
It really doesn't.
The inspection would have been noted that the victims were probably drawn to the barn by restlessness of the stable... And the stable, resulting in noises from the animals. So
horses be like,
poke the horses till they neigh!
What?
A later attempt revealed that at least human screams from the barn could not be heard from the living area. So they couldn't hear living screams. But what about dead screams?
Dead screams? Bruh. That's like the dumbest thing I've ever heard
you say. No, shut up. It wasn't dumb. It was good. It was good quality. Kidding, no.
Good quality.
Good quality. Nah. So, 3 days before the bodies were discovered, artisan Michael Plock...
Oh, yes, that sounds familiar.
...happened to pass in Hinter Kaifeck. Or behind Kaifeck. I still can't get over that.
Behind Kaifeck. Hey.
Michael observed that the oven had been heated by someone. The person had approached him with a lantern and blinded him, whereupon he hastily continued on his way. Michael also noticed that the smoke from the fireplace had a disgusting smell. The instance...
Flesh.
Yep. The instance was never really investigated, and there was no investigations conducted to determine what had been burned the night in that oven.
They had so many opportunities to get, like, the perpetrator.
Perpetrator? That was a good one. Yes. That was a new one.
Perpetrator.
What are you, Tweety Bird?
Tweety. Bruh. Okay. But, like, all those opportunities, and, like, they threw it all away.
Yeah.
On accident. Like, they, it's like the butterfly effect, you know?
Yeah.
They, if they just would have, like, come across the person, or, like, confronted them, they could have caught it sooner.
But they didn't.
I know, right? Crazy.
So on rape...
So on rape? What?
That said rape roll. Oh, no. On April 1st at 3 a.m., the fauner and butcher, Simon Reisenlander, was on his way home near Brunner. Mm-hmm. Or Brunnen. Not Brunner.
Brunnen.
Brunnen. He saw two figures by the edge of the forest, and then the strangers saw him. They turned around so that their faces could not be seen.
So there's more than one.
Yeah. Maybe. Because what if they're not part of the same thing?
Maybe they were like in the woods, you said?
Yeah, on the edge of the woods.
Who just hangs out in the woods?
Cult leaders, my friend. In the middle of May 1927, a stranger was said to have stopped a resident of Wadenhofen. Wadenhofen?
Wadenhofen?
I don't know if I'm saying that correctly. So he asked him questions about the murder, and then shouted that he was the murderer before he ran into the woods. The stranger was never identified. So basically, this man walks out, I'm the murderer, and then runs away.
It's probably, that person must have been dared to do that, man, because, like, no one just does that.
Yeah, he did that to just...
get attention.
Yeah. So there's no clear motive to be gleaned from the crime scene, and the police began to formulate a list of suspects. So let's get into the suspects. Ooh. Hey. So the husband of Victoria, Gabrielle, Carl Gabrielle, was reportedly been killed in Arras, France, during the shell attack in December 1914 during World War I. The body had never been recovered, though, and people began to speculate if he was indeed dead. So, Victoria Gabrielle had given birth to Joseph, illegitimately, in her husband's absence. That, so, 2-year-old Joseph was rumored to have been the son of Victoria and her father, Andres, mm-hmm. who had an incestuous relationship that had been documented in court known to the village. At the end of World War II, war captives from Schroschbenhausen region, who were released prematurely from Soviet captivity, claimed that they had been sent home by a German-speaking Soviet officer who claimed to be the murderer of the Hinter Kaifeck. Some men revised their statement, which diminished their credibility. Some theorized the Soviet was Carl Gabriel because those that claimed to have seen the man after the reported death testified that Gabriel wanted to go to Russia. So, he could be dead. Shortly after the death of his first wife in 1819, whoa! Lorenz S. was believed to have a relationship with Victoria and fathered
Joseph. Joseph.
These names are Hello. Getting to me. The initials LS appears on Joseph's birth certificate, though these could have been initials for the intending doctor. Many of the townsfolk believe that it was Lauren's because of the several suspicious actions immediately after discovering the bodies. So Lawrence and his friends came to investigate the bodies once, like, news got around town.
That's weird. He's like, let's go see the bodies, man. And then they go.
Yeah. The friends agree to it.
That's weird.
They're no better.
True.
So,
Did he suggest it, though? Like, do you know?
Yeah.
Okay. That's even more suspicious.
I know, right?
That's weird, man.
So they had to break a gate down to the barn because all the doors were locked. However, immediately after finding the four bodies in the barn, Lawrence apparently unlocked the front door with a key and suspiciously entered the house alone. A key to the house had gone missing several days before the murders, as they previously said. Though this could have been the fact that Lawrence was supposed to be Victoria's future husband, so...
Wait, so, wouldn't that be considered revisiting the crime scene? Like, let's say he did it. Some people have the urge to go back to see what they did.
Mm-hmm.
So maybe that's why he suggested it.
Yeah, go back to the crime scene.
Because of that urge.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
I'm on to something, man.
You're using your big brain right now.
Yes.
So, when he was asked by his friends why he went in there alone, he stated that he went to look for his son, Joseph. Regardless of any of the above rumors, it is known that Lawrence had disturbed the bodies at the scene, thus potentially compromising the investigation.
His son, Joseph.
Mm-hmm.
He didn't think about that. Like, he didn't think about it right. Because...
Mm. Isn't it kind of weird that if you see four dead bodies, you walk past them, and then you're like, I want to go see my son?
Yes.
Yeah.
It wouldn't be his son either, right? Because supposedly Joseph is, like, the other dude's son.
Well, they're not sure whose son it is.
Oh, that's sad.
Could be the father's, could be Lawrence's. So, for many years after, local suspicion remained on Lawrence because of his strange comments. According to reports on the case files, local teacher Hans... Why name? It's... Wablaga. Blaga. Why name? And... Yeah, you want to try that?
Blair.
Blair.
You sound like the Sims dude. Animal Crossing and Sims, bro.
Oh my god, no.
The sounds they make.
Because local teacher Hans discovered Lawrence visiting the remains of the demolished Hinterkaifeck in 1925. Upon being asked why he was there, Lawrence stated that the perpetrators attempted to bury the family's remains in the barn, which had been hindered because of the frozen ground. This was seen as evidence that Lawrence had intimate knowledge of the conditions of the ground at the time of the murders. Although being a neighbor and familiar with local land, they may have been making an educated guess. Another speculation was that Lawrence murdered the family after Victoria demanded financial support for young Joseph. Before his death in 1941, Lawrence conducted and won several civil claims for slander against a person who described him as the murder of Hinterkaifeck.
Hmm. So he went for trial for that?
Yeah. And he won.
How? All the evidence, though.
All the evidence, but he still won.
He's like, let me bribe someone, you know.
I know, right?
Money.
So in 1951, prosecutor Andreas Popp investigated Adolf's brother, Anton Gump.
Adolf?
So not Adolf Hitler. Adolf Gump. Okay.
Sorry.
In relation to the murder of Hinterkaifeck.
Forrest Gump.
No. It's not the brother of Forrest Gump.
Okay.
The sister of the Gumps. I can't take it seriously. Cazanthia Mayer claimed on her deathbed that her brothers Adolf and Anton had committed the murders. As a result, Anton Gump...
That's why there was two people.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
was reprimanded by police custody, but Adolf had already died in 1944. After a short time, however, Anton was dismissed again, and in 1954, the case against him was finally discontinued because he could not be proven to have been participated in the crime.
That doesn't mean he wasn't in the crime, but...
Okay. Like, considering the fact the only evidence they have against him is the fact that this lady on her deathbed said that they were in the murders of Hendrik Ejvik.
No one would just say that while they were dying, so...
You're on stuff, Yanni, when you're dying.
Oh! Okay, I'm sorry.
Yeah, deathbed, Yanni. Deathbed.
I was thinking of, like...
Anesthetics. Deathbed. Death. Yeah,
but I was thinking of, like, just, like, without anything, just, like, dying.
No.
Like, my last words.
My last words. You committed the murder. Just gotta kill someone, bro. In 1971, a woman named, Teresa? There's no A in this word.
Teresa.
I'm gonna say Therese. Therese. Yes, exactly. So Therese T wrote a letter cleaning and citing an event in her youth. At the age of 12, she had witnessed her mother receiving a visit from the mother of the brothers Carl and Andreas S. The woman claimed that her sons from Sattenberg were the two murderers of Hendrik Ejvik. The mother said Andreas regretted that he lost his penknife in the course of the conversation. In fact, the farm was demolished in 1923. A pocket knife was found that could not be clearly assigned to anyone. However, the knife could have easily belonged to one of the murder victims. This track was followed without result. Krisnes Reiger? 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 Question mark? The former maid of Hendrik Ejvik was certain that she had already been seen the penknife in the yard during her service.
Is that the same Andreas?
Yeah.
You said Oh. Okay.
So the maid had seen the penknife before. The one that it survived. The one that quit. And before the murders. So,
She knew. She could sense it.
She could sense it.
I admire her.
Peter Weber was named as a suspect by Joseph Betts. The two worked together in the winter of 1919 and 1920 as laborers of the shared... laborers, and they shared a chamber. According to Betts, Weber spoke in the time of the remote farm, Hendrik Ejvik. Weber knew the only one... Only one old couple lived there, and their daughter and her two children. It was likely he knew that the incest between Grubber and his daughter. Betts testified in the hearing that Weber had suggested killing the old man to get the family's money. When Betts did not respond to the offer, Weber stopped talking about it.
Sus.
Yeah.
So,
okay.
Joseph and... Sorry, I just now realized Joseph and the other girl are victorious.
Okay.
Mm-hmm. I was making sure.
So the former maid worked from November 1920 to about September 1921 on Hendrik Ejvik. She suspected the brothers Anton and Carl Bischler to have committed the murders. Anton Bischler had helped with the potato harvest on Hendrik Ejvik and therefore knew the premises. Rieger and, Rieger, which is the...
Ruger.
I know, I keep wanting to say Ruger. Rieger, who is the former maid, said Bischler talked to her often about the Grubber and Gabrielle family. Anton reportedly suggested that the family out to be dead. The maid also emphasized in her interrogation that the farm dog, who barked at everyone, never barked at Anton. In addition, she reported speaking with a stranger through her window at night.
Who does that?
Did not me, says I. The maid believed that it was Carl Bischler, the brother of Anton. She thought that Anton and Carl Bischler would have committed the murder together with George Sligel, who had worked at Hinterkaifeck and knew of the family fortune. Supposedly, Sigel had broken into the family, into the home on November 1920, and had stolen a number of items. Though he denied it. Why does that sound like a robot? No!
Though he denied it.
He also stated that he carved the handle of the murder weapon when he was working at the Hinterkaifeck and knew that the tool would have been kept in the barn shed.
Everyone looks suspicious.
I know, right?
It's like, who, like, I feel bad for the detectives. Like, I realize why, like, why they be how they be.
Oh, yes. The Thaler brothers had also suspected, according to the statement by the former maid. The brothers had already committed several minor burglaries. Thank you. That word.
Burgers.
Exactly. In the area before the crime, Rieger had also said Joseph Thaler stood at her window at the night and asked her questions about the family, but she gave no answers. What is with this lady and talking out of her window?
That's, like, messed up. Like, I'd be really scared if there's someone just came up to my window and be like, hi, how y'all doing? I'm like, no.
So I'm trying to sleep. Can you tell me about the family while I was inside?
Sure, why not? It's not my family.
So,
he probably brought her goods.
Probably. In conversation, Joseph Thaler claimed to know which family member was sleeping in which room and stated that they had a lot of money. He also stated that on the Quayside had a lot of, which is where they kept the money. During the conversation, Rieger noted that there was another person nearby. According to the statement, Joseph Thaler and the stranger looked at the machine house and turned their eyes upward. Ooh. Author Bill James.
Ooh, why did he do that?
I don't know, not me.
I guess it'd be.
Not me. I'm just here.
This sharp.
Yes.
Sorry. So, author Bill James, in his book, The Man from the Train, alleges that Paul Muller may have been responsible for the murders. The murders bear some similarities to his crimes in the United States, including the slaughter of the entire family in the isolated home, use of a blunt edge of the farm tool as a weapon, a pickaxe, and the apparent absence of robbery as a motive. The author suspected that Muller, described as a German immigrant in contemporary media, might have departed the U.S. for his homeland after the private investigators and journalists began to notice and publicize patterns in the family Springs, Colorado, and a similar family murder weeks afterward a few hundred miles away in neighboring Kansas. Hey, guess what?
Guess what?
The murders.
Vilishka?
All have to relate back to Vilishka.
Yep. There must be, like, I swear, the axe murders must all be, like, connected, like.
Especially during this time frame.
Yeah. Because most
Muller was also said to be the Vilishka axe murder house killer.
He's everywhere.
The thing is, the curtains weren't covered up in this murder.
Weren't?
Yeah. In this murder, they weren't covered up. In Vilishka, they were.
Yeah, so that doesn't make sense. Or maybe, which one came first? That one? Hinterkaifeck?
Vilishka came first. Vilishka was in 1918.
Oh. It would have made sense if that one came first and then the other one. Because then he would feel kind of like, remorse from that one. And then that's why he covered the mirrors in the next one.
But nope.
But nope. It's not him. It's not the same, like, M.O.
Yeah, basically. So, the bodies were eventually buried, headless.
I wonder why.
In a cemetery in a nearby town, the farmstead was destroyed after all the evidence had been taken from it. Most evidence had been taken from it, I should say.
Most of it.
Some theories still float around that, about who the murderer actually was. Any investigations done recently have been kept a secret out of respect of the still living descendants. As far as the public is concerned, the Hinterkaifeck murders remain unsolved.
That's a perfect way to end it.
I know, right? But, like, there's so many things wrong with this murder case.
There's, like, everyone suspicious. What if, like, they were all in on it?
Who do you think did it?
Who was that one guy? The guy who went to trial for something. Lawrence or something.
Lawrence, yeah.
Because he has, like, the most
stuff. He has the most stuff.
That make him look like the... Yes.
I don't believe the father did it.
No, the father...
It wouldn't have made sense.
Yeah, because he died too, right?
Yeah, he died too.
And it doesn't make sense.
People said it was a murder-suicide, but a murder-suicide would be more likely with an instant weapon than, like, a bludgeoning weapon to the face.
He wouldn't be able to do that to himself. I don't think.
No. Unless we're going to saw it and make some weird contraption that...
So, I think it's Lawrence.
I agree with you.
Because there's just so much evidence.
Against him.
The key thing that was weird, and the fact that he was looking for his supposed son, he just went in there, passed by the bodies, like, oh, that's normal, you know?
That's normal. Where's my son?
Yeah.
Like, it doesn't make sense.
Yes.
Yes. So, to end off the podcast, I say one fun fact about something. And today, in history, 1931, June 12th, gangster Al Capone and his 68 of his henchmen were indicted for violating Prohibition Act laws.
Wow!
You know, Alcatraz would be probably the best place.
For a paranormal investigation?
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah, we're thinking the same thing.
Yeah!
Oh. I feel like I've seen, like, a document... Not a documentary. Like, a thingy. Like, so for... I feel like... Didn't Ghost Adventures go there sometime?
Ghost Adventures and Ghost Hunters. I mean, it's a big place. Where are you gonna think only one of them's going, huh? 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 Okay.
Squeak.
So. My throat's dead. Yours is next. So.
That's sus.
Is it sus, though?
Suggest.
Anyways, continuing on. So.
You said that like 3 times.
I know, I'm just trying to end it, okay? That's all I want.
How do we end it? That is all for today.
That's all for today. Well, thank you for tuning in. Bout said welcome back.
Question, can they comment on this?
No.
Okay, good.
Why?
I don't know.
You're like, let's not.
Because then I feel like we get a lot of backlash. Anyways, yes, that's all for today.
Okay. Yes. Thank you for watching, enjoying, listening.
Whatever you did, yes.
Well, you're probably listening. It's a podcast. It's not like they can see us. Anyways, bye-bye!